WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
This is EC3.
Hey, this is Max Brown, King Robert from the Royals.
This is the undisputed future Seth Rollins.
Hey, this is Kane from WWE.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
I'm Bristol.
And I'm Aubrey from ATTV Flipper Flop Vegas.
Hi, this is Bree.
And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
Yes, this is Broken, not Haughty.
The greatest man that ever lived always likes a good rap. And you're listening to the greatest rack.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Fly, my pretties, fly.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
With your host...
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker, 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 Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers! And her producer... Sir Rocket,
my little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
This right here means I'm the champ that runs the camp.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Everyone, welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com. But to reference over at MBG Films, check them out, YouTube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you happen to have Twitch Prime and you'd like to use your free sub here at twitch.tv/WTRLive, well, just click that little purple heart up at the top of the screen and feel free to use it here. But you're welcome to use it elsewhere as well. And, you know, if you're in a following mood and you want to follow a channel, you can follow my channel, twitch.tv/LinzWard, L-I-N-S-W-A-R-D, where you can check out all my content of Photoshop tutorials, Fortnite, and other random things. And I am your host, Lindsay Ward. Joining me, as always, is the ever-faithful producer/co-host/handyman. And we are talking WrestleMania, Rock. It's here!
It's here.
It happened!
It was live on our television sets via the WWE Network and the Fox Sports app and all the other places that could be, because it's WrestleMania. That's too big for just one night. We had 8 matches. By the way, tweet us at Wild Talk Radio, at Rock Radio Show, at Lynch Ward. Come to the chat rooms at WildTalkRadio.com, RockRadioShow.com, or Twitch.tv/WTLive. And you can interact with us there. Because we have stuff to talk about tonight, because, by God, there was a match that needs to be talked about, because this matchup will go down in history as the single greatest matchup in the history of WrestleMania. And I'm talking about the Universal Championship, Goldberg, Braun Strowman.
By the way, we should probably intro our guest.
From the Superkick Party, the elite assistant to the assistant regional NXT analyst, the intern Kane Critton.
I don't even care about the intro.
All right, let's get that one out of the way really quick, okay? Because
it was really quick. It was the quickest match on the show, actually.
It was really, really quick. And so for all the bullshit that Hunter spewed out there this week, the best part was we're going to take him out in a unique fashion. They randomly threw a graphic up on SmackDown and said, hey, yeah, this is happening. And boy, did it happen. Braun Strowman, not even wearing his real gear, just boots and cargo pants, showed up and won the Universal Championship after eating three spears.
No build, no nothing. Just, hey, Braun, by the way, can you hold on to this for a minute for us? Like, I feel so bad for him, and I shouldn't, right? Because it's such a wonderful thing for him. He won the title at WrestleMania, right? In a last-minute match, they're like, here, nobody else can take the ball. You take the ball and go with it until we're ready to pass it off to the next person. And that's super awesome for Braun. Like, I'm very, very happy for him that after all these years, they finally pulled the trigger on him. But they did it in such, like, a crap manner for him. I feel really bad for him.
So,
you know?
Yeah, I feel very bad for him. But, on the other hand, the video game predicted it, kind of. So, the prediction we did, Roman versus Goldberg, it had Goldberg winning via four jackhammers versus three spears. Instead, insert Goldberg doing the three spears and Braun hitting four running power slams. That was basically the match. So, we saw it sim, just the wrong pieces in between, but that's, and it went as long as that one did, so.
I love it.
Goldberg.
I'm sorry, I laughed.
Goldberg.
I laughed hard.
Goldberg had two security guards with him.
They were not social distancing. They were not social distancing.
My favorite part about that was they walk him. Goldberg is just going, and they're about 3 feet behind him, and then they both hit a door jam and just stop. It's so great. But, oh. All three of us were laughing.
Yeah.
Laughing at that finish. And just because I knew the second that three count hit the mat, there was an explosion on the internet, and I am there for it.
By the way, I want to address this really, really quickly before we get super deep into this show. Everybody is welcome to their opinion about WrestleMania, the good, the bad, the indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
But can we, like, show just a little bit of gratitude out there based on what I've kind of been seeing on Twitter and kind of what I've been hearing? Like, can we just be a little bit more grateful that this happened? Because, like I said on Thursday, this did not have to happen. They could have easily thrown up both middle fingers at all of us and said, hey, by the way, we're not going to do this year, or we're going to postpone it to June or whatever. Like, they could have just not done this. So the fact that everybody on this show and everybody on tomorrow's show went down there, and this is wrestlers, this is production crew, this is everybody that was involved in this, okay? The fact that they all went to Orlando in the midst of a fucking global pandemic where we're all shuttered in our homes, pretty much, to do this for us so we would have this. Can we just be a little grateful for that?
Hey, check marks. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not verified. I don't have a social presence, and I can't get WWE wrestlers anymore, sadly. But can you just be a little grateful? Like, I understand your concern for the talent, and I can assure you that anybody that did not want to be there was not there. Case in point, Roman Reigns. So, or did not work. Case in point, Roman Reigns, because I think he was there. But, yeah, can we just be a little grateful? Just a little bit grateful. Now, mind you, we're going to riff the shit out of the Universal title match because...
We just did. Because guess what?
We just did. But we are no the less grateful that it happened. But I want everybody to know that.
Here's the thing. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. It was bad. We enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was enjoyable in its own way. Now, when it comes to other matches, people busted their ass tonight. Whether or not it was in front of a crowd or not, they busted their ass. And the other thing is these were basically going to be the same kind of matches you were going to get in front of a crowd. Might there have been a little bit more amped because the crowd's there cheering you on? Sure. But these are the same style, same feel matches that you're going to get in front of everyone, and yet people are bitching about it because, oh, it's not the same.
Well, of course it's not the same. It was never going to be the same. I don't know how you can expect them to make it the same when they're not in an 80,000 seat arena. They don't have the set, which I'm crying that we don't have the set because, oh my God, just based on the intro, can you imagine what it would have been?
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's stop right there. Let's talk about how they started the show.
Wait. Before we go there, I just want to plead with WWE. Can we please get pictures of what the set was supposed to look like?
I mean, that'd be fantastic.
I want the set design pictures so bad. I want to see what the stage was supposed to look like. Or can we please kindly request that you do a pirate-themed show at some point in 2020, if we ever get out of our houses, so we can see what the Mania set would have looked like? Because just, again, based on the intro package, it would have been amazing.
First off, the compilation of American Beautiful with all the past performers, that was well done.
That was fire. That was so fire.
Like, hats off to WWE production for putting that piece of work together, because that takes talent right there to cut and splice all that together and have it timed out perfectly. Bravo.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Can we open WrestleMania with that every year? Can that just be now the way that we get America the Beautiful every year, is you just have all these past stars? Can we do that? Is that a thing? Because I would be fine with that.
I'm down with it.
Like, I feel like that's just such a shame if they only use that one time. Because that was a monumental piece of work. But then there's the intro package, which they dropped some serious time and money and production value on it. Like, serious.
Yeah. It was trolly. It was piratey. There was one point there was like a quote in there, and it just, like, I don't remember the quote, but it's like some important guy said.
Well, it starts where they're doing like the really serious WrestleMania, and it's everybody running around as dirty, gross pirates, right? Because they're all dirty for some inexplicable reason. So they're all running around, they're fighting, they're piratey, yar. And then, you know, like this Jack Sparrow-esque type voice cuts in, which I really want to know who did the voiceover, and starts trolling the shit out of the intro. Because he's like, no, this is the end. You start at the end, rewind it back. No, farther. And then it just goes through. And it was just so good. It was like, oh, this is what we needed. This is so what we needed.
It really was. So it was like, okay, we got to start it with a great opening, great video package. It's like, it made you feel like, okay, it's WrestleMania. Like, we don't have the stadium, we don't have the pyro, we don't have it, but it's like, we got the cool video package, we got the music. It was like, all right, we're on a roll here. We're on a roll. So, yeah. So, we were talking about how the guys and girls work in front of a smaller crowd, right? That's what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Tim, the smaller the live crowd, the harder the guys and girls work. They want to give the best to the people who show up. In this situation, they will go overboard to present a great show.
They all went overboard. Like, I loved how everybody kind of adapted to the fact that there was no crowd and they knew the cameras were live. And the amount of shit talking that happened in that ring during these matches is so appreciated.
Oh, it was great.
On every level. Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan in particular just hit that home.
Oh, God.
Mainly it was Sami Zayn.
The smack talk. Even Baron Corbin had some great smack talk on the show.
Baron had some good smack talk. You had a good moment during his match that you never would have picked up on camera.
But, like, here's the thing with Baron Corbin, okay? Baron Corbin can talk shit with the best of them.
If you let him.
Like, he is so good at talking shit, and they never let him talk shit. That's the sad thing. Also, can we just applaud Jessica Carr in that match for smacking him around a little bit? A little bit?
That was the moment.
I was so proud of her. I was just like...
She got up right up in his face and laid down the law. It's like, fantastic.
Yeah, can you count to three? And she's like, yes, back off. And he owned that match.
He did. Was Elias Baron Corbin a great match? No, but guess what?
No.
Did you expect a Corbin match to be really good at all when you walked into the show? No.
Let's put it this way. Would this match have been any better anywhere else? Not really.
No, but it was a Baron Corbin match with Elias, who's not a great worker, but it can put in a solid performance. They put in a solid performance tonight for a WrestleMania show. Like, they were the... Okay, when you think about it, they would have been the cooldown match on a WrestleMania show that you always get. So they played their role well in this show. There's no cooldown because there's no crowd, but that would have been their placement. So it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Like the girls in the opener. And we'll break down everything in more detail as we go. But the girls in the opener.
Oh, that was great.
They did
that was
good.
So great. Oh, and Asuka and Kari's gear. I think more Kari's gear than Asuka. Kari got new gear, guys, and it was so fire. Like, it was so good.
But I mean, in the match, so you had Alexa, good talker. You had Nikki, who's the little Scottish Spitfire and is just crazy as all hell, was vocal enough for the crowd to be a crowd. You had Asuka, vocal enough to be a crowd. And then you had Kari just being sassy as all hell. It just worked!
The trash talk, the screaming, there wasn't a real quiet moment in that match. So they kept you from not losing you. They kept you, something was always happening, whether it was a move or a sound or something. It kept you in the match.
Mm-hmm.
There were some matches where the crowd, it got really quiet and people thought it was awkward. Yeah, it's going to be awkward because there's nobody there. But guess what? Enjoy the wrestling that was put in front of you, because everyone who went out there, everyone who performed, by God, they put on a performance. I mean, Seth Rollins.
He needed a Pope Mobile. He needed a fucking Pope Mobile. I was so sad. I was so sad. That was like the one thing that it's like, he walked out like that. And I'm like, oh man, he would have had a Pope Mobile. I know he would have. But he needed the hat. He needed like the hat and the staff. Like, if you're going to go sacrilegious, Seth. Go the full shebang.
I mean, they have the outfits. They have probably something from the Mordecai wardrobe in Stamford.
I'm sure
somewhere.
They still have this staff somewhere, and in worst case, they can call Kevin Thorne and be like, dude, we need you to do us a solid.
So yeah, Seth was dressed in all white tonight. Just so
you know what? You could put Seth in the coal mine and put wheels on it. There, done.
I think if they could have gotten it down there in time, they probably would have, but I don't think they were able to get it down there in time.
The fact that they still let Becky have somewhat of an entrance, because she was probably going to drive the semi into the building.
Probably.
The fact that they still let her pull up in it was great. Like, she's been using it on Raw the last
3 weeks.
3 weeks or so. So, like, yeah, it was great.
Although Lindsay did bring up a good point about the entrance.
Yeah, they didn't take her temperature before she went in the building. I was very concerned. I'm sorry, I don't mean to poke fun of it, but I've been trapped in my house now for 3 weeks, and this is all I have, guys. This is just all I have.
If we can't have a little bit of fun.
If we can't poke humor at it, what's the point, you know?
I mean, we're all sitting here being really serious at times, but it's like, you gotta have some humor. I mean, if you're offended, I could complain to Tim at Flames for him. He'll tell you.
Yeah, sorry if you're offended, but it's like, it's just...
You can tag him in the chat as well, because he's sitting there and listening in the chat. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Tim. He's going to yell at us.
He's going to yell at me. He's going to yell at me for sending people to tweet him at Flames Forums. But this whole show overall, like, the way they came out, and like, you had Kevin Owens and you had Seth Rollins and Edge. They put out these heartfelt statements leading into the show. And then you can tell it meant so much to them.
You can tell that they wanted to do the show. Just, I want to address LeMans real quick in the chat. You had to see the semi in the light, and that was part of the problem, was they shot it at night. It's custom painted up to her. Mm-hmm. So it's got, like, her face and everything all over it. So if you haven't seen it on, like, Raw, then it wouldn't necessarily make sense. But it's, like, it's got her visage all over it. So that's the connection.
Yeah, her face on the front, and then the flames leading up the side are from her back, or are coming from her hair. So it extends back into flames. It looked nice.
There probably was more to it. There's probably a whole thing.
Yeah, there's
to
a
it.
Whole thing connected to that we will never ever get to see, because it was part of WrestleMania, and I think they just had it and they started letting her use it because fuck it.
Why not?
We paid for this.
We're going to get more use out of it. Why not? You know, just have her roll up in her own personal semi because it's Becky.
It's what you do, and that's okay. So yeah, I'm trying to think of what other things we need to touch on before we dive deeper into the show.
We're saving the Boneyard match for the end, just so everybody's aware. We're gonna, because I mean, that just needs its own.
We're gonna let that breathe in a minute. One comment I'll make about that before we really dive into it. If that was what we got, I'm okay. My heart is like, okay, Firefly Funhouse is going to be all right. I don't have, after watching SmackDown, I was like, okay.
I think we were all a little nervous about the Taker match and the Bray match coming into WrestleMania because we didn't know what to expect. And it was like, we talked about it on Thursday, where it's like, I want the full cinematic treatment of both of these matches. And then on SmackDown, we saw what they did with John and Bray, and it's like, okay, all right, I'm feeling good about this. This we're going in the right direction. I know how WWE makes good produced TV. So, all right, we're doing good. After tonight, I want to see the Firefly Funhouse match. I want that in my life so hard.
All right, Impact with a very nice, well-timed tweet. It seems like a good night as any to rewatch the Final Deletion. Well done, Impact. Well done. Well done. That the final deletion was very delightful. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Let's one more thing about the show before we dive deep into it. I love how they decorated up the PC. They had all the lights on. They had all the lasers. They had everything they could get into that building. They had the giant ass as tall as the building WrestleMania sign. I don't think I ever realized it was that large because it doesn't look that big on TV, but you see it in the context of the building of how big it actually is. At least I think that's the one for Raymond James. That thing is freaking huge. And they got it in the building and they just set it up and they're like, here is your giant sign. Enjoy.
That's right behind the announce crew in case as Jabber, you needed a backdrop. Yeah, there it is.
As Jabber said, that's what she said. Also, Tim goes, if the Boneyard was a red wine, you'd be letting it decant right now. Yep. Anyway,
Did we aerate it first?
So watching SmackDown and Raw for the last 3 weeks, right? They've taken the Performance Center and they've turned it into a darkened arena with just some lighting. Tonight, to make it feel WrestleMania-ish, because that's the best way to describe it, it was WrestleMania-ish, they turned all the lights on. It was very bright. You had the LED signage around the ring. You had it on the ring post and on the ramp. Then the physical ramp itself was LED. So it's like you had it all. You had the feel of it being WrestleMania without it being WrestleMania because you can't do that. Like the big signage, as they were just mentioning, made it like felt so good in that building. It made it feel like it's a different place than it has been for 3 weeks of dark television.
An effort was very clearly made with the building, with the lighting, with everything to do what they could to make this feel as mania as possible, given the circumstances that they were handed. And I feel like they did a beyond admirable job. I think we all wanted a little bit more because we just wanted more, but I'm not going to complain about the way that it looked at all because I think they did a beyond fabulous job with it in changing that space and making it feel as WrestleMania as they possibly could. Like, it just looked and it felt so good in that building. It was so bright and just the red and the white and the black and everything was popping and it just looked so nice.
Well, and one of the things when it comes to Mania is it's gotten bigger and bigger as the years have gone on, of course. Like, I was watching a thing earlier in the week just to get me ready, and it was, you know, like chronicling the history of Mania, and it's amazing to think even like 10, 15 years ago, it was still only like 20,000 people that were attending Mania.
Well, and I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, and it's just been constantly building and everyone's expectations have constantly been getting bigger and bigger that it almost gets to the point where unless it's extremely over the top, you're kind of like, oh, and you feel disappointed because it's supposed to build off of what happened. I kind of like the fact that this year, I mean, it's a very special event still, but, you know, it's of course, having to be scaled back a bit because of the situation.
No, I agree with that, because it's like they've been showing the old Manias from the past, and it's like I think they showed like Flair versus Shawn this week, or on SmackDown, the final with the heartbreaking moment, I'm sorry, I love you, I love you, I'm sorry, which will forever be iconic. And you just look at that set and you're like, wow, it's changed so much. Like, I mean, you even go back and you look at like the WrestleMania 20 stuff, like they were showing for the Taker match, they were showing like the video package and all the past stuff that he's done, and they showed like a commercial. By the way, he's getting his own network series, y'all. Yeah. In case anybody's out there. The Undertaker has his own network series.
The Undertaker, The Last Ride, coming to the WWE Network, it's a whole series they're putting together, which...
A limited time series.
A limited time series, which means probably 2 or 3 episodes. But that's okay. Give it
but
to
they
me.
Got the man to sit down and do an interview.
They got Vince to sit down and do an interview about The Undertaker.
Well, I mean, they're kind of work married, so, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, you go back and you look at the commercial for that and for the past Manias and everything, and it's like, wow, the sets used to be just really so small. Like, they really did, but, you know, it's like every year at Mania, it's like, oh my god, it's Mania, look at the set, it's insane! And I think it was like 25 where they really just amped up the set and made them just ginormous.
Because they would do for years. They were just doing reveals like the night before.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how much it's grown year over year over year.
To the point where people have started getting disappointed in the sets. Like last year, everyone was disappointed. That was just a big giant LED screen. But it's like, what else can they do at times? I feel like this year they were going to go all out because
the pirates.
They had a natural tie-in. Like sometimes you don't have the natural tie-in.
Like, they had a pirate ship built in the stadium. I feel like they were going to work around that ship and build that ship into the set.
Mm-hmm. So I think that covers all the outside stuff. By the way, you're listening to the Rack Review WrestleMania Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio. We're about to dive deep into all the 8 matches that we got on day one because, you know, WrestleMania is just too big for one night.
Everybody take a shot.
Technically 9 matches.
What do you mean 9 matches?
We promise not to go 3 hours.
We don't have 3 hours because we don't have the time. That's the problem. We don't have the time. Anyway, pre-show. It was Cesaro against Drew Gulak.
Which was surprising comparing some of the rumors that we had heard. One of those competitors was supposed to be out.
But there he was in the ring fighting. And it was a pretty solid match. The finish was great.
The finish was great. It just felt like out of nowhere, though.
The finish or the match?
The finish of it. Like, I liked the move that set up, but it just kind of felt, I don't know, it felt like there should have been about 2 more minutes left in that match. It just kind of like, he hit the move and then just pinned him and you just kind of went, oh, that was it? Huh.
But it's a pre-show match. I mean, I kind of can figure it out why it ended as it did. Because this was on the WWE Network. This was also on Fox. So you're probably timing things to a certain point. If this wasn't actually on television, they probably would have got the extra 2 minutes.
Okay.
But it was on FS1 as a pre-show. So it's like, that's why they were like, when you watch Corey and Peter, who were doing the pre-show, who have no chemistry whatsoever.
Oh my God, that was, no offense to them, but that was painful. That was really, really painful.
Like, they had zero chemistry working together. Because I think it's the first time they've actually worked together in that type of environment. So it's like, and Corey's a good analyst. He's not a host, but he had a host this show, the pre-show. Like, someone usually has to feed him, and he would go. But he was trying to lead the ship, and he's not a great leader of the ship in terms of things.
Why wasn't Rosenberg doing it?
Because he's also an analyst for this. Like, even on his own show, he's not the main, he's an analyst. Like, on his radio show. He's not the actual host. There's someone else.
Okay, if WWE wants to pay me to come host their shit, I will do it. Give me a call. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
So, yeah, neither one can carry. That's the point I was making. So, it's like, it was just awkward. So, it's like, you needed a third person. You needed Tom Phillips. Or Renee. Or someone. By the way, props to Renee dressing up for the occasion on the Skype call.
Her and Booker.
And Booker, yeah.
Mark, I understand he had a nice shirt, but when you have Booker in a tux, you have Renee wearing her Hall of Fame dress. It just, one of those things did not look like the other.
But props for her going all out for it.
Look, when you pay for it, you're going to wear it, because I actually think she's been walking around the house in it all day.
Probably.
I don't think she just put it on for the show. I think she's had it on since like 8 o'clock this morning.
Or whenever that was filmed, yeah.
My question is did she have to kind of lock Dean in a closet somewhere so she can film that?
Probably. Actually, she probably just looked at him and was like, I'm going to do work stuff. Actual work stuff. You can't show up on film with the dog. Go in the other room.
Or she waited until he had to go film in Georgia.
He was probably
secret undisclosed location.
He probably was filming when they filmed that, because this is all taped. So he was probably off in the undisclosed location in Georgia. So she was able to get it done.
You know what? Renee really is a mom in this situation right now. Like, the kid's not in school, and she's having to do the work call while he comes just strutting in behind her on camera.
At least he had pants on.
That is a step up for Dean, or John, or whatever.
Whatever his name is.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so. So yeah, Cesaro officially beat Drew Gulak in the opening contest on the pre-show.
Airplane spin with no hands. That was creative.
I popped
when
for
you
it.
Have to social distance and wrestle at the same time.
That's what you get.
Difficult problems require creative solutions, and leave it to Cesaro to have a creative solution to everything. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, good lord. Anyway, the main show. What are we starting with?
Well, I think we should start with the first match, which was the girls, Alexa and Nikki, taking on Kari and Asuka.
For the Women's Tag Team Championship.
They worked
a hell of a match.
Oh, they were so great. I loved the start of it. Asuka just teasing Alexa for her, you know, cutesy pose. And then Alexa just sassing her right back, along with paintbrushing her. It was so good to see that set up.
Then Alexa taking the shots from Kairi, and then walking up and then smacking her right across the face.
Yeah. I've missed Alexa wrestling. I really have.
And you know what? Kudos to Alexa during this match, because she took some punishment, but she also... I know she has her gymnastics background, but to see her do a cannonball, that was impressive.
Very impressive. That's the best way to describe it. It was impressive. Like, and again, we talked about it. It's like, they didn't blow you away with anything. But they were physical with each other. They were hard-hitting. They were aggressive. But they were very expressive in how they perform. And that's what you have to do in this situation, is just be very expressive.
Yeah, Asuka was great in this match because she just played herself up when she was in the ring. When she was out of the ring, she was providing the noise that you needed to kind of break the silence. Nikki was doing the same thing. She, you know, rallying Alexa, just being her crazy little self. And then you had, you know, Alexa and Kairi giving, you know, some of the more athletic movements and, you know, some of your high-flying spots. It was a good all-around match in the situation.
And there was really no rest spots.
Mm-mm.
They kept it moving, and that's what you needed in this one, because they were the first match out on the main show to really give it. And I think, okay, was this the greatest match of all time? No,
but it was anyone would argue that.
But it was a very enjoyable match. Just again, to take you out of the headspace we've all been in for 3 weeks, and like, this is good. This is enjoyable. It's not like, it's not making your brain hurt. You watch four women go out there, put on a show. They worked hard. Nikki was busting out of her gear so hard.
Yeah, I don't know when that happened, but all of a sudden, her vest was just kind of open.
Right? And just, I don't know how it happened. It just was, oh, there it is. But it was well-timed. There was one moment.
Yeah.
That Kairi, the elbow to break up with him was, like, weirdly timed.
Yeah, it was, she missed the initial one, and so they had to edit in the elbow drop. So it was just one, two, different angle, boom. And I know people are going to slam them for, oh, they've had this for a week. But at the same time, you knew that she missed it the first time. It's never going to be the same setup, no matter what. But did they do the best they could with that situation? I'll give them that.
I mean, I'm not terribly offended that they edited the match and they redid it. I think that's completely fine. It's like you said, it's not perfect. It's not going to be seamless, because they just can't stop it and be like, okay, reset, go back to one and do it again. It's okay, all right, that move didn't pan out. Let's do it again and get a better shot of it. But I mean, at the same time, it's like, how often do they get the chance to do that? Most of the time they don't. Most of the time they're in front of a live crowd and they have to take with what they get. So the fact that they were able to go back and fix the spot and make the match, improve the match by not having a blown spot or not having a blown moment in the match, I think is fine, even if it's not perfect. I'd rather have an unseamless transition than a blown spot.
And that's fine. Again, it was just a take from the thing. It's like, okay, this really positive. Here's a take. Boom. Move on. It didn't take away from the match. That's all. Mm-hmm. It did not take away from it. So, in the end, we have brand new women's tag team champions.
Woo!
Yay!
Alexa and Nikki.
The best buddies have the belts.
I think Asuka and Kairi have been really good champions. I think they've just been sort of caught by the draft and the brand split. And we all, I think, knew... Okay, I think I'm back. Am I back?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So anyway, so I think the titles have been affected by the brand split. I think we all kind of knew they would be, just because they can't not be, if that makes sense. Like, because you have the champions on one show. And I've always kind of argued that, like, those titles should go between shows. those champions should get to travel. Like, they're the only ones, and that would suck to be the tag team champions, but they should be the ones that get to go between, like, Raw, SmackDown, and maybe even NXT to give all the women a chance at those titles just to keep them relevant. Because what sucks for Asuka and Kairi is there aren't enough women on Raw to sustain a SmackDown or sustain a tag division. The same thing is true for SmackDown. You only have a handful of women on each show.
Yeah.
Well, and you can't all have them all in tag teams. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when the belts were first introduced, that's what they were marketed as, is these are going to travel. And that's what Sasha and Bayley made their argument for. We want to take them wherever because we're going to face any challenger. We want, you know, all the women to get a chance to fight for this. And, you know, we know what happened to them last year. And then, you know, the Iconics had the belt. And like you said, I think some of it was the fact of there just wasn't a lot of tag teams within the WWE. Yeah, we can get the pairings of like, oh, Natalya and Lacey Evans, but is that really a tag team or is that just a filler? And so you got the Kabuki Warriors that came along. They got the belts off of Bliss and Cross, who had held the belt admirably beforehand. And yeah, it was just, they had a bad run of situation, whether it was Kairi getting hurt or Asuka getting injured or just random situations in which one or two may not have been available.
The last 6 months have been a very unfortunate time, not for just them, but for everyone in WWE. All goes back to the Saudi stuff and them having issues coming back. So they changed Survivor Series plans, and then they moved forward and they moved Asuka into the title picture for a single, so you can't really go for the tags there, even though they defend in December. And then, you know, someone's getting ready to get married, so they have to take time off in March. And then March became, well, what we're dealing with right now, March. Is it still March?
No.
Are we still
in
March?
No, we're in April. We're officially in April now.
Feels like we're still in March. It's been just, yeah. Anyway.
We're March 37th.
March 37th. So it's been a thing. So it is what it is. So it's like they've had unfortunate, but they held it for what, 6 months, I think they were saying on television tonight. So they had a reign. Alexa and Nikki will now come in. They'll probably try to do some more with them when they can and maybe move them around. I think Kairi and Asuka went down to NXT once.
They faced Tegan and Dakota.
So it was a pretty solid title, right?
I feel like, especially right now, because they're all shooting in the same location, right? They're all at the PC, or they all were at the PC. They can no longer shoot in Florida, so that's going to make it really interesting for where they go, because they can't go to New York either, which is like their number two. Is if they're taking everybody to the same place to shoot the show, you could do more with those titles in that instance because they're all in the same place. Like, it sucks when they finally start traveling again, and like, if you're having the tag team champions on both shows, because then they're doing twice the travel, because they have to show up for one show on Friday, do the house shows, go to the show on Monday, and then they get to go home. So that's not too terrible, but it still kind of sucks for them. So
especially right now, it's a brand new loop. When they're back in the touring schedule, it's a new loop because they move Friday SmackDown Live.
Yeah, so I think right now it would be okay to have them do both shows because in all likelihood they will be there anyway, because I suspect they're going to bring everybody in for Raw and SmackDown and NXT and just shoot it all in one shot and then send everybody home. But it all depends on what happens coming out of WrestleMania.
Which is very the future is very uncertain. Like, that's the thing. The future of what this is going to be very uncertain. And as we've mentioned on this show in the last few weeks, we don't know. So it's like, we'll go from there. So maybe they'll do more with the titles. Because for everything, on the pecking order of things, Alexa's very high up in what WWE likes to promote. Because she's one of their bigger stars. So whenever she has the title, they try to do more stuff with it. So we'll see where it goes. So up next, kind of talked about it, Baron Corbin and Elias.
Nice little filler.
Yeah, you had Corbin come out in his smuggiest.
Oh, he was so on point. Like, Elias is not going to show up. He's not going to show up. Raise my hand. Give me that victory. Elias strums out and then, boom, hits him with the guitar.
My favorite part. Oh, we forgot to mention. So, I just have to say, MVP of the night, Michael Cole.
Oh, to start? Yeah. He called that whole pre-show by himself.
The opening show by himself, he steered this show for the most part.
Him and Tom.
Yeah, he had a special guest.
No, they had two commentary crews. Tom and Byron did Raw.
Oh, no, I know. But just, you know, for as much shit, and I mean, I'll admit we're guilty of it as well, of giving Michael Cole, he does have moments like tonight where you go, actually, he is pretty good.
For a second, I thought he was doing the entire show on his own. And I was like, he's going to need a medal by the time this is all over. Because he's doing this all by himself. He's doing 2 days worth of WrestleMania all on his own. God bless him for it. But thankfully, he did have a little backup. But still, like, damn. Because I'm sure he would have done it.
Oh, yeah. He probably would. He would have went all Joey Styles. And for a minute, I thought he was going to go all Joey Styles tonight. But he didn't, thankfully. Because he would have been burnt out. Even though it's all taped, he still would have been burnt out. Because that's a lot of talking in a short period of time. Let's be real. So there was that. So yeah, it was Corbin, it was Elias. They worked a solid match. They worked their match. It was exactly what it was.
It was a Baron Corbin match.
That's exactly what it was. But guess what? There's nothing else you can imagine.
I feel like the verbal smack talk in this match made up for any other shortcomings. Like, yeah. If we could just get Baron Corbin talking shit in the ring as he's beating somebody up, I feel like that would improve the overall quality of what's going on tremendously. Because it was entertaining as crap.
It was. In the end, you had Elias getting the win with a handful of tights. So the feud will continue. We're all excited for the feud of Elias and Corbin.
Yay!
To continue on. Coming out of WrestleMania. They did not settle things on this night.
This feud is just too big for one night.
Go to your corner for that. Go to your corner. Alright, up next. What's next?
It is the Raw Women's Championship, Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler, the biggest surprise of the evening.
Becky retained. I was actually legitimately shocked. But the more you think about it, the more it makes sense, because it's like, okay, then this means that this was always the plan, number one, which it could have been, or two, she and Seth have either already gotten married and they're just going to delay their honeymoon, or they're just taking their honeymoon now, or she and Seth have delayed the wedding until this is over and they can actually like do the whole kit caboodle shebang and everybody can come.
Maybe, possibly. Who knows? Maybe because of the situation and they're not needed as much, so they can show up for one day, go on a honeymoon, come. You never know. You don't know what the situation is. I know the man says this was not the ending. We all want it, because trust me, I wanted Shayna to win. We all wanted Shayna to win, because you were looking to see the story they were going to tell with Becky losing the championship. But they called back to Shayna's first loss in NXT, and it was the same exact finish.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I messaged you when it happened. I was just like, oh, this is Ember again. And I think I didn't mind this ending, because Shayna went in really cocky this match.
Mm-hmm.
And she fought the match really cocky. It was a lot of, you know, smacking Becky around and like, look, I can do whatever I want to you. And she locked her into her move, and yet Becky reversed it, got the win. And I think Shayna's face at the very end sold it, because she had the look on her face like, how did I get duped? How did this happen to me? And when it happened in NXT, she came back more vicious. She came back more determined, because it was that thing of, you got me before. I'm going to make sure I beat you down next time so you can't do it. And that's what you can do with this story, because we already saw Becky getting a little cocky, and then Shayna, you know, beat her down, and it was kind of like, no, now you're making me serious. Now we get to see Shayna's response. Maybe it's her looking at this going, okay, I need to buckle down. I need to not try and take her lightly and make sure I finish the match.
And I think one thing to take account into too, is that it's pollen, guys. It's pollen. It's not the plague.
It's a plague. It's a plague. It's always the plague.
It's not the plague, I promise. It's pollen. Is that Becky is still Becky. Becky is extremely resilient. You don't hold the title for a straight, solid year, go against everybody that... No jobber, it's not the plague, I promise. Go against everybody that she's gone against, right? Like, and Becky has gone against a who's who in the women's division of WWE to hold on to her championship for a straight year. You don't do that and not just be thought of as a powder puff, which is what Shayna did. Because again, Shayna walked in, like Brent said, super duper cocky, right? She's owned the women's division in NXT for years, almost 2 years. Nobody's really been able to challenge her until essentially Rhea Ripley. as of most recently. I forget who beat her. Was it Ember who beat her for the title? Or was it Kari?
Kari.
It was Kari. So yeah, Kari and... Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, Ember is who Shayna took the belt off of first. Then Kairi took the belt off of Shayna because she had it in the chest.
Right.
Because
and then Ember
got
it back.
Yeah, because Ember moved up to the main roster following that WrestleMania.
Yep.
Yeah. And then they gave it back to Shayna, and then Shayna held it until Rhea came along. So Shayna has every reason to be confident. She's walking into the women's division in WWE on Raw, and she's beaten a lot of the women that are already in that locker room. I think the only one she hasn't beaten might be Becky.
Charlotte?
Maybe Charlotte too. There's like a handful of them that she hasn't beaten.
Because they've never met.
So she has every reason to be confident, but it's like going back to Becky. Becky has every reason to be confident too. And I think Shayna made the number one mistake. She underestimated Becky. And Becky played that to her full advantage.
But Becky was in a lot of trouble in this matchup. You saw she was close. Shayna almost got her a couple times in the disarmor, a couple times in this match. The one thing about this match, and I said earlier with the other women's match, is they kept the action moving. And that's difficult for a Shayna Baszler match, because you can look at a Shayna Baszler match, and you know what type of match you're going to get. You're going to get a slow, plotting match, because a lot of it's ground-based submission type action, a lot of chokeholds, you name it. Here, she was more aggressive, she was quicker, and they kept the action moving, because again, you can't sit there in a chokehold with no crowd. So it was like, they kept the match moving, they kept it short, it was about 8-9 minutes. So it's like, it didn't go as long as it probably would have on a grander scale, just because you have to limit what they can do. And if you're going fast paced for 9 minutes, that's better than 15 of a slow down period to ramp back up. So they kept it going, kept it moving. And I thought they told the right story in some aspects with Shayna, as you guys mentioned. I'm really surprised Becky has still the champion again.
I think some of that is, because we're going to be in a holding period for about 6 to 8 weeks.
We believe.
I mean, for right now, there is the stay in place, the stay at home order. We don't know when that's officially going to be lifted for Florida, Georgia, or any of the other home bases that they could technically film at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dead serious when I ask this question. Does Texas have one?
I do not know.
I believe Texas has. They put out a list. There's only 8 places, I believe, that don't have a statewide, but that can also change in the next 2 to 3 days, because we saw places like Georgia who had not had a full state order.
I put one out real quick. Well, our governor finally learned, y'all. He finally learned that the virus is transmitted through airborne. He didn't know. This is the man that's in charge of our health and welfare.
But I was going to say, when it came to the Shayna, possible win, I think when she wins, she needs to immediately go on a tear through the division, like she did NXT. I think her winning the belt here, and then it being static for 6-8 weeks possibly, and then getting in front of the crowd, wouldn't do anything. I think if she wins the belt and then can begin a quote reign of terror, that can do more for her character than, say, Becky dropping it now, and then whenever we come back, Shayna then beginning stuff.
I kind of get this hunch, and this is just me, that probably a lot of the titles are not going to change hands, that the only one tonight was the Universal title.
No, and the women's tag titles.
And the women's tag titles, but I think...
And the 24/7 title. We had 3 title changes. 3!
Do you really count the 24/7 title?
Yeah, that third
one. You really count that?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I mean, actually, that one should be counted, because that's about the only one that they can keep going during this. Because it can be defended anywhere, anytime. But anyway, I just feel like they aren't going to do the massive amount of title changes that they would have otherwise, because we don't know what the storylines are going to be coming out of WrestleMania. We don't know what their shooting schedule is going to be. We don't know how they're going to do anything until all of this is over. So it's like, just keep the titles with the majority of people that have them, short of like Goldberg, who's probably not coming back after WrestleMania. So it's like, it makes sense to take the title off of him and put it on Braun, because Braun has enough of a social media presence that he can put the title out there. Everybody can see it. Everybody can see him having fun on his farm as champion. Expect that thing covered in mud very soon.
And also the fact of, with Braun, you already have him under contract for an extended period. With Goldberg, if you wanted him to come back, you would probably have to fork out money, which I know the WWE has coffers, but as we've seen right now, a lot of places are going to start tightening the old belt strap a little bit.
Yep. I mean, because they've probably had to issue refunds for WrestleMania, for a lot of the other shows that they've had to cancel, or they've had to reissue tickets. I mean, make no mistake, this hurt. This hurt a lot. But I feel like they have tried to make up for it. And one of the reasons why WrestleMania probably went on was purely for the financial aspect of, we have 80,000 people, 80, 90, however many thousand people that have bought this show. That is 80 to 90,000 people that we have to now refund tickets or reissue tickets for another show, which is a revenue loss for them later on. So we need to find a way to recoup as much of the money that we've lost as possible. That's not even including what they lost on access and what they've had to refund for access. All those tickets to get into the event, all the autograph signings, everything like that, which is just basically pure profit for them. They lost all that money.
If you want to know why there was a hard push, buy this show on Fox Sports app or foxsports.com or on your Fight TVs or your traditional pay-per-view. This is why. Because they're trying to recoup as much money as they can in different avenues. Because they got made deals with Fight TV and Fox Sports. So they got money coming in off of those pay-per-views. So like they brought in different forms so they can recoup some of this money. They're not bleeding money. WWE's fine. They always have that Saudi money. They're good.
They're good, but I mean, when you think about probably the millions of dollars that they have lost on just this one event, and not even including everything surrounding this event, all future Raws, all future SmackDowns, future house shows, all the merch sales, everything. Like WrestleMania, I think, does anywhere from 50 to 100 million conservatively in terms of business in a local community.
Even more.
And that's
even more. And
it's big, big fucking business. So Tampa lost out this year. Tampa got fucked this year in terms of an economic boom because of WrestleMania. And that's why cities kind of fight for it, is because of what it brings in. So, and WWE is no exception to that. They make basically their entire operating budget, I think, is set on what they make off of WrestleMania.
So just to put a number, WrestleMania 35 generated $165.4 million in economic impact for the New York, New Jersey region last April. That's 60% more than it did for 29, which was $101.2 million.
That's awesome, Jobber.
And that also doesn't count the auxiliaries that go in with WrestleMania at the time. WrestleCon, any of those other independent shows that run there that also bring even a drop in the bucket money to local businesses and everything.
Mm-hmm. So that's part of the reason why this show went on the way that it did, was WWE is just trying to recoup any investment, any money that they can in Mania. And then after that, it's like, well, because everything is now off the table, they can legitimately consider going dark, because, okay, we've hit the pinnacle, we've hit WrestleMania, we've hit where we were planning to go. And we can just wait on everything else until this is over. Like, that was the other really awkward thing about this show, was that when this all started in the U.S., they were about 3.5, I think, to 4 weeks away from WrestleMania.
They had just come off Elimination Chamber.
They'd just come off of it. And it was like everything at the time when all of this started was, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, everything's fine, nothing bad's going to happen, it's all going to go away. Like, that's all the press and the media and everybody were saying. And very, very few people, there were people that were warning that this could get worse. And I think WWE was monitoring the situation. And I think they were hoping to do it in Raymond James, at least in the empty arena.
Vince still wanted to do it. He had his plan to get there as much as he could till the last moment. But
yeah, till they were like, yeah, no, you can't do that. So they were monitoring the situation. I think WrestleMania was always full steam ahead until the state of Florida was like, nah, you can't do it. We need you to cancel. And they're like, we don't want to cancel it. We need you to cancel it. We need you to say that we can't do it, because then we can pivot and go do this, which is what they did at the Performance Center. And that's why it took so long to find out the fate of WrestleMania, was because it was WWE and the state sort of going back and forth with each other, trying to figure out what they could do, right? If there was anything they could do to salvage the situation, which is what they did is what we're getting now. But yeah, this is all a play by WWE to try to save what they can out of WrestleMania and get some money coming out of it.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, and this is your first time here at twitch.tv/WTLive, hit that purple heart above the screen and follow the channel so you can know when we go live next. Wrestle Talk Radio will be live tomorrow night following WrestleMania to cover the second half of WrestleMania. We'll be live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, to cover the entire second day as well. So there you
come
go.
Listen to me scream about Bray Wyatt.
And coming up after we're done talking about WrestleMania, we're going to have CB Raider. We're doing the Wrestle Madness event where we're going to try to figure out who out of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and AEW, who the top star is in Wrestle Madness. You can go vote at greaterthangreatdebate.com. We're not even halfway through night one of WrestleMania. That's how much we're at right now. So let's get to the next contest.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're going to lose as much money as other companies, but it's do what you can right now, because coming out of this, there's going to be a huge economic impact that I think people haven't quite realized is coming yet. And so WWE is trying to do what they can to ensure their survival. That's what they're doing.
And this is also the fact of that, as Brock kind of touched on earlier in the show, this is the end of your year. This is your Super Bowl. This is where all of your main storylines end, so that you can set up the next season. Mm. And if you delay this, you're delaying all of those storylines. You're delaying all of... You're putting on Endgame, but like the last 30 minutes of Endgame. instead of just doing the movie 1 year later, you're going to show everyone, okay, this is what it's all building towards. Oh, but that final fight scene? Yeah, you're not going to get it for... We don't know when. It could be June. It could be August. And one of the things that I touched on to someone who had some qualms with me earlier tonight was...
Made friends, did you?
Oh, I made at least one friend tonight. If this goes into August, you can't have it at a stadium anymore. Because guess what? Preseason hits, and I don't think Tampa is going to lose out on some of that sweet, sweet football money so that you can put on WrestleMania. When that takes over your stadium, it goes right on your field. You need to protect the grass. And if anything happens to the field, oh, you're screwed.
Well, especially now that Tampa Bay is debuting a superstar in the fall, potentially. Yeah, they're not gonna lose out on that.
Imagine.
The young kid.
Yeah, that young upstart kid quarterback they brought in. By the way, that would have been a get for them to have him at WrestleMania. Just saying.
Oh.
That would have been a get.
He definitely would have been in the crowd shot. He could have been like, hey, Tom, We'll give you a little bit of money. Can you just, like, stand there for 5 minutes?
You wouldn't even have to do it.
That's all we need.
You wouldn't have had to do it. His buddy was hosting the show.
True.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to say this. No offense to Ron Gronkowski at all. Can we not have that?
But no, he made the next moment. It was Sami Zayn versus Drew Gulak for the Intercontinental Championship.
No, not Drew Gulak.
Or Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
Daniel Bryan versus Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental Championship. Gronk and Mojo made that moment, doing the yes points.
The best thing was, is Brian comes out, and you can hear yes, and you're like, did they pipe that in? And the camera immediately goes to Gronk in his Zubaz suit.
Yeah, what the hell is that?
And Mojo doing the yes, and it's just, at that moment, you're like, oh, that just worked.
I have to say this, I'm a little disappointed, and I understand circumstances, but I'm a little disappointed they did not get Matt Riddle to show up at least once with Gronk and Mojo, just to complete the bro, dude bra, beer pong, frat party vibe they had going on.
We still have one more day.
We do still have one more day, but it's like Mojo, Riddle, and Gronk, yeah.
You want Kappa Gamma Bro?
Kappa Gamma Bro!
God.
So Sammy and Daniel for the Intercontinental title. Pretty good.
This was the match that was made for no arena. Or for no crowd.
Sammy stalling was great. It was great. Sammy stalling, running around.
Sammy is the most underrated talent they have. Tonight proved it. That's all I'm going to say. He's fantastic.
And Daniel Bryan coming in and just shit-talking him. Like, you don't deserve this. And just smacking him and kicking him as hard as he can. It was great.
Well, the best part about that matchup is the whole setup of, you know, Sammy running away. And as soon as Daniel would chase him down, Cesaro stood in front of him. And then Shinsuke would stand in front of him. And you could just tell it was that frustrating moment of, like, what the hell's going to happen? Then Drew comes along and dive bombs them, takes them out of the match, and that's when Sammy Dunn realized he screwed up. And just the whimpering, just every shot Daniel hit, and you just hear, and JBL's like, I didn't think there was crying at WrestleMania.
Well,
there is now.
There is now, because Sami Zayn is a very sensitive man.
Oh, and just every kick that Brian would hit or chop just resonated in that arena. It was great.
There's one thing about Daniel Bryan, he does not hold back.
No. And you know Sammy probably told him, just like, just lay into me. Go for it. He hasn't had a match in a while. Hit me. Oh, so good.
Really, really good. So enjoyable. In the end, with a haluva kick, or sort of a haluva kick, as Sammy just lifted his foot all the way up and Daniel Bryan just smacked into it as it came off the top rope after taking out Cesaro and Shinsuke on the outside. Sammy beats Bryan to retain the Intercontinental Championship.
I loved everything about this so much.
So good.
Good. Zayn is perfect in the role he's in.
Being the chicken shit champion. It just works for him. Until he gets to a point where his bros can't help him, and he ultimately gets his comeuppance, and everyone is just going to wait for it, and when it happens, they shall cheer.
Could they have had a 20-minute wrestling classic? Yeah, but you can't have that here. You need the chicken shit heel. You need the chicken shit character here, because, again, as we've pointed out throughout the show, the lack of crowd, you need to be more expressive and entertaining, and that's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta give a reason to be entertaining. If you're not entertaining, you had no place to be on this show, because you would flop if you cannot emote the correct way. Anything else we need to talk about in that match?
Nope, I think that's good.
All right, up next is a triple threat ladder match for the tag team titles.
With singles competitors,
because as announced apparently on The Bump, Miz got injured in the brawl on SmackDown, which he stood tall in.
Hey, sometimes hangnails or... you know, slightly adjusted knees can be hidden. You just don't know. You don't know him.
You don't know. You really don't know. But this allowed John Morrison, Kofi Kingston, and Jimmy Uso, the competitors for the respective teams, to go out there. And they put on a hell of a ladder match. And they beat the hell out of each other and took some interesting falls and dives and stuff. And a match in front of nobody. And they should be commended for everything they did in this matchup. Jimmy Uso took a bump that you didn't really see him take the bump, but you kind of assumed what the bump was, where he flew off the ladder, went to the flying to the outside.
You heard the smack,
which, yeah. That's all that matters. This is a one-time editing, and, you know, taping in front of a new crowd helps, where you don't have to always take the big giant bump and make it seem like a bump.
There may have been a crash pad, we don't know, but...
And that's fine. Crash pads are perfectly legal when you can't see them. But they... went out there. Morrison hit some hell of a starship pain at one point early on in this match.
Oh, God.
Kofi proved how talented he is. Okay, and one thing, it's like, you look at the bodies you remove from this matchup, like, Big E struggles sometimes in ladder matches, so it's like, it wasn't a bad thing to move him out of the match.
They got the three perfect people to do a ladder match.
Yeah.
For this. They really did. Because Miz... ladder matches are not Miz's strong suit either. Like, they got Morrison in there to do the ladder match for the two. Because it's like, yep, he's good. He knows what he's doing. Because and then I think either Uso would have been perfect.
But Jimmy's the better of the two. So he was the right choice. And Morrison, with his parkour training and everything like that he does, him walking across that top rope and then going into the Spanish fly, which is overdone, but actually worked in this matchup because he added some other element to it with the tightrope walk.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. And go ahead.
There was just a lot in this match that... you had the perfect people, you had the perfect situation, and also, like Lindsay was talking about, Big E being in the match is great, but it also saves him from having to do a, you know, spear through the ropes, probably into a ladder that we all would say he shouldn't do. And, you know, it saves Miz from having to take probably some wicked bump that he probably didn't need to take either. But you still got the enjoyable part of this match, and this... as I talked to you guys about, this would have been basically the same match you got in front of the fans.
Yeah. It's a couple different bumps here and there that they had to, you know, creatively do.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. But that finish. So you had all three men up on... You had Morrison going for the title. Kofi stops him. And then Uso gets back up, brings his own ladder. And you have the three men fighting on top of two ladders. They're all holding... They all pulled down the title belts. And they're holding it on the contraption that's on. Which is, I still think it's weird that they have a contraption for it. But that's where we are at the stage.
It's classy.
It's classy. But the fact that they have to pull down the contraption rather than the belts is always weird.
Well, okay, but look. They made it. They spent a lot of money getting that made for Randy Orton. They might as well reuse it whenever they can.
I understand this. I'm just saying. So they're all fighting. And then Kofi and the Uso headbutt Morrison. And he falls off the ladder. Onto another ladder, which probably hurt like hell. But yeah. as he fell, he unclipped the belts, and they fell on top of him, and he was holding one of them as he rolled off the ladder and hit the mat.
The look on both Jimmy and Kofi's face sold that situation.
Mm-hmm.
It really WTF.
Yeah, when Morrison hit the back, and they're both holding that thing, and they look at each other like, what the fuck just happened? And you have the announcers going, Morrison secured the belts. And you realize at that moment, oh my God, he just escaped.
He just grabbed his titles and he just ran. Like, out of all the finishes tonight, that was probably one of the most clever finishes I've seen in a while. Just in terms of a ladder match where it's like, hey, they have to say I have to get the titles. They never said I have to get the thing holding the titles. And if they're too busy fighting over the thing, I'm just going to come in here real quick, grab my title, and leave. Yeah. And that's what they did. And it was just fantastic.
Well, if you listen to the rules at the beginning of the match, all it says is whoever scales the ladder and secures the titles wins the match.
For a minute there, I thought the Uso and Kofi were going to hold the belts.
Yeah, for a second, I thought they were co-champions. I was like, wait, what? What just happened? And then they showed Morrison, and I was like, oh, that's what happened. Okay, all right, we're good. We're good. It's fine.
It was an innovative finish.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it needed to be. It needed to be creative. And they walked out of there, Morrison and Miz, as the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Good job, Miz. You earned that title.
Seriously, Miz, I hope you're feeling okay, and it's not the plague, because we don't want you to get the plague. That would be bad.
That would be bad. Yeah, in all honesty.
Especially with the Wii one and one on the way.
Well, no, they're both.
They're both around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you not want or listen to our Ms. and Mrs. recaps?
I mean, come on now. You better be listening to the Rack Extra Reviews, Ms. and Mrs. All available at RackRadioShow.com.
I'll binge them. I have a little bit of time at work.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Shameless plugs. That's what we do on this show. Shameless plugs.
Natural. All yeah. Natural. What was the next match?
The Monday Night Messiah in his white gear.
He needed a Pope hat. He needed the goddamn Pope hat.
Taking on Kevin.
Okay, this match was a little weird because they had Seth get DQ'd. And Kevin technically won the match because it started and it blinked and then Seth got DQ'd. And it's like, wait a minute, that's it? That's the match? That's all we get? All this build and that's all we get? It's like, that was so anticlimactic.
But
then Kevin Owens.
Hold on, before you continue. It would have worked perfectly because he was screwing him out of his WrestleMania moment. Like, that finish of the DQ finish, him screwing Owens out of the big win, was a fantastically booked idea. Continue.
The one thing I love about that moment especially was Seth hits Kevin with the bell.
Yeah.
And then tells them, ring the bell!
I'm pretty sure he rang Kevin's bell, but that's right, beside the point.
I just love that of like, boom! Okay, now DQ me.
Please, thank you, sir. And then Kevin gets on the mic and he starts screaming at Seth, and I think he just insults Seth to the point that he's like, Seth's like, just restart the damn match!
So Owens...
Okay, Kevin, you don't know when to stop!
So Owen said, Rollins, you're supposedly the god at WrestleMania, but all he was a little bitch, and challenged him to a no DQ, no count out match, and Rollins like, you never learn! You never learn! Alright, fine, let's go! And they go.
They go, and Seth instantly regrets his life choice.
He then regrets his life choices. They brawl a little bit, and then Kevin Owens does something, Lindsay, that someone wishes they could have done.
I would like to congratulate Kevin Owens on making history, because I believe he is the first person to go off the large WrestleMania sign at WrestleMania, and he beat Shane McMahon to it.
Not named McMahon.
Yeah, not named McMahon. Actually, I think, period. I don't think a McMahon has ever gone off the WrestleMania sign, so the fact that he beat Shane to it is just great.
Shane is sitting somewhere going, God damn it.
And he dove off the WrestleMania sign through the announce table, right? And no, there was no padding. That was a regular announce table.
Yeah, that hurt. You know that hurt.
Kevin felt it. Seth felt it. The cameraman right next to them felt it especially.
We felt it a week later.
But in the end, Kevin Owens, stunner, 1-2-3, beat Seth Rollins in about 17 minutes, got his WrestleMania win, got his WrestleMania moment, because that you can replay the dive, because you can just, you know, creatively find the right angle for it where you can, you know, do things with it. So his moment will stand the test of time, jumping off a WrestleMania sign, so he got his moment.
And hopefully he went backstage and Vince gave him a hug.
Hopefully Vince wasn't backstage.
No, I think Vince was
I know he was backstage. But anyway, the point was hopefully...
I know he is of the the population, but...
It's Mania. Vince is going to be there. They'll put him in a bubble. It's fine.
It's fine. All elbows? Just elbows?
Vince will flex at the virus, and it will go away in fear.
So yeah, Kevin Owens got his big WrestleMania win.
This is fantastic.
So, R-Truth is up there on the perch with Gronk and Mojo, and he's like, you know, there's so much pressure with this belt, I just can't take it. I just need to hide. Can you guys hide me? And Gronk's like,
Mojo was done with his shit the second he got up there.
So it was Gronk, and Gronk nailed R-Truth in the chest, goes to cover him. Mojo's like, nope, not gonna let you do that. Shoves Gronk off, pins Truth, and gets the 24/7 championship. So Tim thinks R-Truth gets the title back tomorrow. I think
probably.
I think Gronk gets the belt tomorrow.
I think it's Gronk, because Mojo looked at him and said, I've got this, come and find me, essentially. And you just saw Gronk looking at him like, oh, it's on.
He said, come get it. I ain't running, Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, I can.
And then Gronk looked at Mojo like, what the hell, dude? Like, bro.
Party foul.
Massive party foul.
Okay, so we need to go back a little bit ways in this show, because I just remember something, because I see what's coming up next. And it's like, oh, wait. There's a moment we need to talk about that doesn't affect the show, but we talked about it all night. So way back earlier on in the show, I think it was after the first match, Baron Corbin was interviewed.
Why would you put Kayla Braxton next to Baron Corbin? Why would you do that to her? Oh my god! Like, holy shit, she's tiny!
Yeah, that's when I looked at that, and for the first time ever, I mean, I knew Kayla was a smaller girl. But holy shit, she looked like Baby Yoda next to him.
Like, it was actually quasi-offensive that as they're panning up and zooming in on Corbin, she just steadily disappears, which is what always happens, but she just disappeared really quickly out of the frame, and all you see is her disjointed hand until they finally got to the end of the mic, but she's so short that she's almost having to hold the mic straight up for him to talk. It's like, Baron! Be a gentleman and take the mic from her. Don't make her stand there like a mic stand. Just take the mic from her. Please.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Because that led to Paul Heyman promo with Charlie. So it's like, okay.
Which Paul Heyman advertised WrestleMania on WrestleMania.
Yep. And they did a good job at it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was the Universal Championship. Go ahead.
Paul's promo bordered on a little bit of creepy, because it wasn't the yelling Paul. It was a different version.
Yeah.
When we get that really, like, evil genius, methodical Paul Heyman, it's creepy, but it's awesome at the same time, because you get to see his true, like, his true value. Because when Paul gets, like, really devious, you're like, oh shit, somebody's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that man knows how to do evil. He knows how to do evil and malicious very well.
So as we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, we have a brand new Universal Champion, Braun Strowman, beating Goldberg.
I don't think we need to. I think we laughed for 10 minutes at this. We laughed for longer than the match lasted, honestly.
The match lasted 2 minutes and 10 seconds was the bell-to-bell time. 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
We've probably talked about it for longer, honestly.
Makes me smile.
So Braun Strowman got his big WrestleMania win and is now the Universal Champion. So what was the bigger carry for Braun at WrestleMania? Was it the kid or Goldberg?
Oh, shit.
honestly, Goldberg.
Yeah, because at least with Nicholas, it's like he had two guys to fight off of, and so yeah, like he had help. With Goldberg, it was just, you know, eat a couple spears and then pick that sandbag up onto your shoulder and do what you need to.
So, your question was brought up in chat. Has The Fiend versus John Cena happened? No, that airs tomorrow night on the day 2 of WrestleMania, because as we've learned, WrestleMania is too big for just one night.
Take a shot. I have a comment about that, but I'm not allowed to say it on air, so I'll keep it to myself. But Rock and Brent have both heard it, and they agree.
Yes, we're going to keep those comments off the air.
Off air. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just for reasons that you all don't need to know. So now we get to what we've been wanting to talk about the entire night, because this was epic. And we're going to break this down piece by piece. So strap in, because we're probably going to go long on this. Strap in. We're here to talk about the Boneyard match between The Undertaker and AJ Styles. So this is, as always, this is The Rack, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Coming up in 1 hour from now with CB Radio Live. Go to greatandgreatdebate.com. Vote on Russell Madness. So now let's get into this match.
I just want to say straight up, before we talk about anything else involving this match, I now want my wrestling presented like this forever.
Oh.
This was equal parts epic, this was equal parts theatrical, this was equal parts camp, and I loved all of it.
Let me just say... Oh,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
There you go.
We've talked about this before Mania, we talked about it in some of the other things, but I just want to give a 30-second hats off, shout out, whatever it takes to the WWE production team.
Yeah, they deserve a standing ovation for this.
Especially for what happened at the very end of this show. Everything leading up, you know, the camera shots, the, you know, anything that they could have done in the Performance Center was great. This was next level.
They built, y'all. They found a site, and I'm not sure if the building was there. I think at least the building was there in some part, but they built an entire set for them to do this in, where they brought in fake tombstones and everything else. And maybe that was always the intent, and this was part of the original WrestleMania, because for them to get the tombstones made that quick, I don't know about that, but they could have just found some really good fake ones. But either way, they built an entire set for them to roll up into and do this in. And by the way, I love that only in WWE can you just, like, have a completely unsupervised fight to the death in the middle of the night in a cemetery that's filmed for all of our enjoyment and everybody's fine with it. Like, I love how, like, someone in WWE management was just like, oh yeah, AJ Styles and The Undertaker want to murder each other in a cemetery? Fine.
Sure, why not?
Do it.
Why not? Make it happen. Do the thing.
Yeah, book
it. Sign this. All right, go on.
Like, I just love that only in wrestling can you do shit like that, because in any other context, the cops would have been called and they would have rolled up before this ever started.
So, we open up this eerie Boneyard cemetery, whatever, and you see a hearse start pulling up, and we all sitting here going, oh, that's The Undertaker, because so, Druid's come out of the hearse, and the coffin comes out, coffin opens up, it's not The Undertaker. It's AJ Styles. He's mocking The Undertaker in his own yard.
In his cockiest best ever, comes strutting out of that casket.
Yeah.
Hope. And boy, the second we saw that, the first thought was, oh, you're gonna die.
Yeah, it's like, oh honey, you poking that bear one more time and he's on his way. It's like, oh snap, oh shit. And then Taker. Oh, Taker. Oh my god, I was so happy, guys. You don't understand. So way back in the day, and this tells you exactly how old I am, I started watching wrestling when The Undertaker was the American Badass. I never saw the Deadman gimmick in its original context. I only ever saw the American Badass when I first started watching. So my exposure to the Deadman gimmick is about 2003 on.
No, actually, 2001 on.
Three.
No, 2001. That's when he started.
Dead Man.
Yeah, that's when he started. That's when this gimmick, Badass Taker, was 2001.
Right, but I'm saying the Dead Man gimmick.
Oh, Dead Man gimmick. Oh, Dead Man gimmick. Okay, okay.
Yeah, American Badass was 2000 to 2003.
Okay.
I will fight you on this.
Rock, default to her.
No, I was reading. I was looking up something. Sorry. All right, continue.
Anyway, so I started watching with the American Badass, and that was the Undertaker I fell in love with, okay? And we had our love-hate moments, don't get me wrong.
She's had many moments with him, Hairgate.
I've had so many love-hate moments with the Undertaker, oh my god. But still, through and through, we've come through it, it's been fine. So when he went to the Dead Man gimmick, it was like, okay, yeah, that's cool, that's different. But it's like, I really missed the biker gimmick, and he always like kind of involved it. Or he kind of incorporated it, but for the most part, it was straight up Dead Man Undertaker. Y'all, this motherfucker right here came rolling up on a motorcycle. I was so happy. I was so thrilled. Like, they just show this light in the distance, and it's like, oh my god, yes. Yes, they're gonna do it. They got him a motorcycle. They did it. They found one.
So here,
and he does. He takes this long ride. I'm not done. He takes this long ride down this road, the scenic route, as the Undertaker's rolling up for this fight, right? He's on his chopper. He shows up. He rolls up. He parks the bike. He gets off. We see this long rising shot up the Undertaker's legs, past his hips, his stomach, and his chest, and all the way to his face. So we get a nice, wonderful view of his brand new outfit, and he looks so cute.
So you're missing one key aspect of that entire thing.
What?
Not only did the Undertaker roll up as the American Badass, Dead Man Inc., all dressed in leather, right? Bandana tied tight, sides cut, trimmed nicely. He found the barber.
He got his hair fixed, guys. His hair looks so much better.
He got nice and cleaned up. But the Undertaker, Mr. Over-the-Top Everything for WrestleMania, got his brand new entrance. Because he had a Metallica song playing into the graveyard. Like, he not just rolling up in the with the bike, he gets a Metallica song to roll up with his bike.
It was so good. It was so awesome. It's like the second that happened, it's like, I don't care what happens in this match. I got what I wanted. I got my American Badass Undertaker back for 5 minutes, and I'm so damn happy. But I think it's with the Ash that said it. I think it's Ash that said it in the chat that this was a great blend of Old Taker and New Taker.
LeMans.
LeMans.
It was LeMans. I'm sorry. It was LeMans. It was just enough up where I couldn't see the name. So I'm sorry, LeMans. But yeah, where it was a blend of American Badass Undertaker and Dead Man Undertaker, because we had lots of references. Like, somebody else in the chat brought up that the shack behind them was kind of like an ode to the original Undertaker shack, which was cool. They had a casket for no reason whatsoever up on the end of the shack.
She was obsessed.
Never
with
got used. It was just a set piece, but it was there. And
so right as out of the game when AJ comes in, so. You know how they do their graphics, right? Everyone, WWE does their graphics for the big, you know, overlays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. As a cinema person, I love this.
Simple text, AJ Styles. Simple text, The Undertaker. It's like they're filming a goddamn movie with the text. It's WWE 24, as Brent pointed out as we were talking. It's like, that's the font they use. It's like, here it is.
This was so clean. This was so good.
Interesting. AJ Styles and The Undertaker. Here they are in a Boneyard match, but it's like it's the start of a film. Here's this character, and then here's this character.
I was going to say, it was the opening credits of a fucking movie.
Yeah.
It was AJ shows up, and within 30 seconds of his fucking ass appearing on screen, you had AJ Styles. This was the trailer for the beginning of the movie. It was beautifully done. As a cinema geek, I lost my shit.
Yeah, just the cinematics in this match, just the production in this match. I want all my wrestling like this. All of it. Like, this was... This made complete sense that it's like, you know what? We're going to settle our grievances. You've been done nothing but talk shit about my wife and me for like a month now. I'm going to end you. Let's go to a cemetery and end each other. Like, that makes more, so much more sense to me in this context than let's go to the ring and settle it. No, let's go to a real world place. We're going to beat the crap out of each other and then it's over.
So,
go ahead. Gonna do it for Mania. This is the one that it works with, because if this had happened at a regular Mania, If it had been, oh, we're going to cut away
you
to go to a Boneyard match.
Oh, it wouldn't have worked. It never would have worked.
It would have been disjointed as hell. You would have been like, wait, what? And as great as the match turned out, you still would have felt like this is awkward. With this Mania, it fits so perfectly.
Because you can't have 80,000 people. I think I mentioned this on Thursday. It's like you can't have 80,000 people just looking at a video screen.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. That's not how this works. You have to entertain the
masses.
And you can't
do this at an arena.
No, you can because you got away with it with the arena. You got away with it the backyard, the whatever the Goldust Piper match was. You got away with it then.
Oh, but what I mean is, it's like with this match. As much as you had the cinematics and you can watch on a screen, but you couldn't pull this match off at an arena.
No.
Because it would lose something. It had to be offsite. It had to be recorded. It had to be
this
edited and put all together into this package.
Because it made Taker look like The Undertaker. And that's what this was driven out to be. This was a vehicle for The Undertaker to look like The Undertaker.
Oh, God. Taker looked like $1 million. He looked and felt so good. Like, this was the first Mania that he came out of where you're like, that's my Undertaker. There he is. Oh my God, I've missed him so much. And there he is again and on my TV screen, whole. And it just felt so wonderful to see him again. I mean, like I said, I want him like this all the time now.
So
like, that's how I want him because this was just, LeMans brings it up, the dialogue.
It was great.
Dialogue in this match, the shit talking in this match. They're just beating the shit out of each other. And they're just talking crap the entire time to each other.
So this match in quotations opens up where they're both there standing each other, they're trash talking, and Styles didn't think Taker show up, and then he built him a grave. He dug him up a grave. And then Taker's like, you dug your own grave, son. And then he's calling him an old man, and they start fighting. And they get near the hearse. Taker picks up a pipe, tries to hit AJ, breaks his hand, smacks his hand, Goldberg style, through the window of the hearse.
He's cuts bleeding. The shit out of his arm.
He's bleeding.
Yeah. I can't remember Taker's exact words, but it was just like, you busted me open, you son of a bitch.
Made me cut my arm.
Yeah. It was just, it was like, he wasn't even, like, angry about it. It was just more perturbed, like, boy, take your beating, for the love of God.
Like, just stand there and let me hurt you so I can go home. Actually, the best line of the entire thing was when AJ looked at Taker and said, does your wife know you're out this late?
Yeah. when he first rolled
before
up.
Before they stuck a punch.
Yeah.
Does your wife know you're out this late?
We're just going to go there right from the get-go. And that's what they did.
All right, AJ, those are going to be the words that are on your tombstone. Let's go.
So, Taker just breaks the glass, and he's like, okay, fine, whatever, and he just starts beating on AJ some more. Just keeps beating on him and beating on him, and then nothing even stops. And then AJ does the one thing you shouldn't do, but does anyway, kick the Undertaker in the balls.
Yeah, you just, why? Why would you do that to him?
That took the wind out of Mark's sails for a bit.
Yeah, and as a result, AJ ended up in the hole.
Yep, Taker gets back up. Knocks him back in the hole and goes, how's it feel down there? And then it's like, we're just getting started. And then out of nowhere, Carl Anderson with Luke Gallows appear.
And they're spoiling for a fight. And Taker's like, all right, come on.
All right, boys.
But then Let's go.
Then they're near the building. They pull down some boards. And all the druids start to appear. And you go, what side are they on?
What the hell is going on now?
They all circle Taker, and Taker's looking around, and he's trying to figure out what's going on, and Anderson and Gallows are standing there, AJ's still in the hole. I was like, okay, so are they going to turn around and fight Gallows and Anderson? Are they going to attack the Undertaker? What's happening? And then one by one,
boom, 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 down they all went.
The best part is Taker looks at all of them, and he goes, all right, let's do this. He just takes them down.
I love it. It's like, oh my God, they just had a 53 or 54 year old man take out like 10 people. It was great.
Then Gallows and Anderson start getting an advantage, but the Undertaker, you know, he fights back up. Then out of nowhere, I guess with a tombstone from behind, AJ Styles smacks him with it and drops Taker to his knees.
Like an actual literal tombstone, not like the tombstone pile driver, like a literal tombstone.
Yeah, legitimate
good
tombstone.
Good old piece of slate smacked him and broke.
And then
that hurt.
And then he starts talking crap about him, how's it broken down old bitch. And then he picks up a shovel, he's burying the Undertaker with it, you know, verbally. And then, you know, uses a shovel right across the back, sends him into the grave. And then AJ's like, ashes to ashes. Dust to dust. And then the three of us just sitting here going, okay, Styles now going on to this tractor. And we all questioned, does AJ Styles know how to do it?
Yes, he lives in Georgia. He owns land. I'm willing to bet he knows how to work a tractor.
Okay, I have one question before we go to the next part. How did AJ get out of the hole?
I don't know how he got out of the hole.
You know what? There was a hidden rope in the hole. And he used it to phenomenal form his ass out of there. It's the only conceivable way.
Wait. Taker flipped AJ off? Where? Where in that match did he do it? I didn't even see that.
I apparently got blurred. Okay.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was as AJ was putting him in.
Probably.
Because there was the one moment where Taker looked like he was going to give him the, like, come on look, and he flipped the bird, and that's when AJ knocked his ass back.
When he was leaning against the wall, okay.
Oh, that's right. No, that's right. That's when he's in the shack.
God, I love Taker. He's such a spiteful son of a bitch. Anyway, I'm sorry. Taker's
that's
in the
right, LaMance. Thank you. Thank you for the reminder.
So, again, there's a lot to cover in this one. So he's in the hole, but then maybe one of the druids pulled AJ out of the hole. Who knows? Who knows how that happened?
I have questions. It's like, how the hell did AJ Styles get out of the hole? He's not tall enough to get out of it, so how did he get out?
Well, speaking of getting out of the hole, so he gets on this tractor and he's all giddy. He's ready to go move, pour the dirt on the Undertaker. He's gonna bury this man, this old piece of crap, alive. And then, boom! Right, standing right behind him on the behind the tractor is the Undertaker.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Lindsay. No, go ahead.
I like how they made it a point to, like, take their time with this. Because you know how, like, every other Buried Alive, they take their time to have Taker get in position to do the Buried Alive. And, you know, they actually made it a point to show Taker lying in the hole. A few times to make sure you saw him. And they're taking their time with it. And then it's like, oh, I guess this is it. I guess Taker's going to lose the match. And then, yeah. Boom! These lights come up from behind the tractor, and there's the Undertaker, his eyes full of brimstone and piss and vinegar, angry as shit, behind AJ Styles, like, oh, son, you about to die. You about to die so hard, because magics.
When the lights hit, and so Taker goes into the hole looking beaten, just tired, you know, making some ungodly sounds. When the lights hit and Taker is just standing there, fresh as a daisy, the light of God behind him, and you just saw that moment that AJ realized something happened, and he does that slow turn, and it's that meme of, and that's when he knew he screwed up.
Yep, and then Taker proceeds to just beat his ass across that graveyard. AJ runs back over to...
Hold on.
The shack.
Before we get to the shack, let's talk about it. Taker selling of being the old man and just being dead, and like him, he was moaning all over the place for every shot, and like heavily breathing after he got his ass beat for a while. He sold it perfectly before he went into the grave.
He's such an overdramatic slut. I swear to God.
He played it up so well, but that's what they needed.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's exactly what they needed. So Taker appeared with all the lighting and he just scared the crap out of him. And he's like, you don't last around here without taking an ass kicking. And then he just starts walloping on AJ Styles. And this is what you want, boy. This is what you want. And they fight near the barn or whatever it was, when he was just mentioned. And then, you know, randomly there's a ladder set up. So what does AJ do? He walks his little old ass on up that thing.
And then we all start going, Mark, no. Mark, don't do it. Don't go up there. Mark, I swear to God, don't do it. What does he do? He climbs the ladder.
He climbs the ladder, then he catches Styles with a big boot, kind of. Then Gallows and Anders.
Medium boot.
Gallows and Anders show up, and they're trying to help AJ. Nope. Taker's like,
they
nope.
They died for their sins.
They're dead. They're gone.
Carl took a tombstone.
Luke was thrown from the top of the shack. And later in the match, you still see him just laying there.
I mean, yeah. And then the Undertaker still more trash talking to him. And then he drops him off the top of the barn with a chokeslam. And then you...
And AJ's just dead. AJ's just laying there dead, like he's done. And we're all standing there because Taker's looking over the top of the roof and he's looking down at AJ, who's laying on like this pile of fake wood or whatever, the wall of the barn that got knocked over. And you just see Taker standing there looking at him and it's like, oh no. No, no. No, 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 no. Don't you do it. Don't you jump off that roof. You go down the ladder like a smart person. You're too old for that shit.
Then we have an edit to just appearing, the Undertaker appearing on the ground, but just seeing, looking at his feet, just walking over.
No. You saw the foot. You saw the last foot or two coming off the ladder. So
yeah, it's like you saw him being smart, climbing down the ladder, coming back to the ground, and then he picks AJ up and he starts hauling AJ towards that grave. He's talking crap the whole time.
What was her name again? You remember my wife's name again? How old am I, boy? Well, listen, take care of my. What about my legacy, boy? And he's like, "We're just getting started, boy. This ain't over." And then he puts him up on his shoulder and he walks him over to the grave. And then, you know, he's like, "Ah, boy, you brought the fight, boy. You think I'm going to put you in that grave? I ain't going to put you in that grave, boy. No, not going to be a thing."
You took your beating,
Aegis. I'm sorry. You're tougher than I thought you would be, kid. And I'm not going to bury you. He looked like he was going to. He wasn't going to bury him. And you fought your ass off tonight, kid. You brought the fight. I didn't think you'd give me that much. You're good, brother. They hugged.
Taker's petting his head the whole time.
He petted his head.
Reassuring him like a child.
Like, good boy, kid. Good boy. You did good, kid. You did good. You did real good, boy. And then Taker walks away for half a second.
AJ's like thinking he got away with it and he's standing there and it's kind of like, all right, yeah. And then Taker rolls around and boots him right in the fucking face into the grave. And just AJ's just laying there.
He's laying there. He's in the grave. Taker then walks over to the tractor, turns it on, dumps the dirt on him. Okay, so throughout the match, and this is, we'll get to how that's finished in a second, or the complete ending of it. The music throughout this just played to the whole entire movie aspect of it.
This is so good.
Yeah, pyro, you know, a couple points in the match.
Yeah, we need to talk about the magics. We didn't talk about the magics on the roof. Because Taker gets up on the roof, right? And AJ's trying to run from him. And Taker's like, hey, yeah, you remember that unholy trinity thing that I talked about? You know, where I said I was bringing it? Boom! Fire!
Yeah.
Just like he explodes the roof of the shed. AJ has to jump to get away from it because he was a little too close to it, I think. But yeah, Taker's like, bitch, I brought magic. You brought Gallows and Anderson. I brought fucking magic with me. How are you going to fight that? Like, this made me so happy. So happy, guys. You don't know. I'm so excited for this because it's like we got American Badass Undertaker. We got Deadman Undertaker. We got motherfucking magic in this match. So, and then we got Taker just pulling some Game of Thrones level shit where he's like all reassuring like a good father and then he just boots AJ's ass right into the grave.
So
and then just kills him.
He kills him. So he does. So as the music's playing, you just, it's all the dramatic music and then it's like the dirt gets dumped into the grave. Gong. So there's like a remix of the Undertaker's graveyard theme for this. So it worked so perfectly. And then Taker, you know, does the whole thing. Then you see the camera of AJ's hand sticking out there. I'm alive. By the way, props to Montez Ford, I think it was, who put the cup out. The picture with the cup.
It's a meme. It's already a meme.
That was fantastic. So Taker.
So many good memes from this match.
Taker, dramatic as all hell, walks over to his bike, puts his bandana back on, sticks up his hand. Pyro shoots off everywhere, and then the Undertaker symbol appears on the barn.
And a purple laser logo.
You have a laser, the symbol light show, and your pyro, everything Taker would have, and he just drives off in the sunset with the Metallica song playing. Holy hell.
This This was wonderful. This deserves a standing ovation. Just thank you to everybody involved, not only in this match, but the whole show, but this match. Like I keep saying, I don't want my wrestling any other way now. I want it on this cinematic level where it's just like, we don't go to arenas anymore. We're just going to go wherever and we're just going to fight. Because this was so, so good. Because this is what I was talking about on Thursday, where they can take their time with it and they can do stuff like The Undertaker's magic, and they can make The Undertaker and AJ Styles and Gallows and Anderson look legit badass. Not that they don't on TV on a regular setting, but in this context, they can stop and they can cut and they can just make everybody look so good.
And they looked
in this match
really, really good. By the way, how long do you think this match went?
I think this was like, what, 10, 15 minutes? Or no, it was like closer to 20.
35.
Oh, shit.
It didn't feel like 35.
No, it did not.
No, it didn't. And
like, that's the impressive part. That's how long it went. It didn't feel like it. It did not, like, it did, it had a great pacing to it. It was, the final 35 minutes of WrestleMania was just this whole cinematic adventure we went on with Undertaker and AJ Styles.
Lindsay,
but this was,
I have one question for you. So we got this tonight.
I'm already pregnant. I don't need it again, but I want it again.
And it was artfully done. It was done in the style of Taker. AJ, the young kid who he wanted to, the younger kid, I should say, who he wanted to work with, sold it like $1 million for him. What are we getting tomorrow?
Tomorrow's going to be fucked up. Like, if this is what they did for Taker, I cannot imagine what they're going to do for Bray.
Okay.
Like, it's going to be messed up, whatever it is.
Okay. Lindsay, you need to explain the phrase pregnant, what that means, please.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not actually pregnant, guys. I'm not legit pregnant. So everybody's aware. Not... I mean, unless the Undertaker really does have the ability to like impregnate people through their televisions, I'm not actually pregnant.
It's a phrase, Tim. It's a phrase.
Yeah, it's a phrase, Tim. I'm sorry. It's like this made my ovaries explode, and I'm now currently pregnant because of this match. Like,
you know the meme now, Tim, the ovaries exploding meme.
That's
what the deal is.
Sorry, Tim. I didn't mean to freak you out. This was everything I could want from this match and more. Like, this was perfect. This, like I keep saying, like, this just not being in a ring, this just being a fight. There's no ref, there's no nothing. There's just literally a camera person there and a sound person and a lighting person, and those are the only witnesses to this, and nobody's stopping this. No, there are no cops rolling up. There's no referee saying, "Hey, Taker, maybe you shouldn't do this." Like, this was a throwback to Taker in the mid-90s, that he would just mess people up. And he would just throw them into graves or throw them into caskets, and he would just kill people. And I keep saying this, that I love that one of the most beloved characters in WWE is a guy that essentially murders people. Because that's what he does. That's who he was in the 90s, was he killed people. Like, he killed his own family in storyline context. He set his brother on fire multiple times. He set Paul Bearer on fire, I think, a couple times. And, like, in terms of Austin and Rock and Hunter and everybody else, like, he's a horrible person.
He kidnaps people.
Like, Taker is not a good person, and I love that we got to see the malicious, sadistic side of Taker tonight, that we got that for that one brief moment, and also we got to see what an asshole he actually is. In the best sense. Like, the fact that we just got the sarcasm and the snark and the fact that he got to be an asshole to Styles and he just got to talk shit. Because Taker can talk shit. They don't let him. But when they do, it's wonderful. Because let's not forget, the man runs on, like, piss, vinegar, and spite. And I think coffee. Possibly scotch. I'm not sure. But lest we forget, Taker is a ginger. Natural ginger. He reacts accordingly. Like, he's just, that's who he is. And we got to see him tonight. This just made me, I can't stop saying it. This made me so happy. Like, this match just made me so fucking happy on all the levels. It's great.
I think the one thing that this match did above all else, it showed, you know, it reinvigorated the Taker character.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a while, we've seen things that, no offense, have kind of taken little pieces away.
And he, like, would admit that.
Right. The first match with Hunter, you know, when you saw Taker get rolled up the ramp, a little piece kind of disappeared, it felt like. And, you know, the match with Roman, the match with Brock, the, you know, the match in Saudi. There were just these little things. And while we kept going, oh, but there are these other glimpses that, you know, Taker still has it. Or, you know, oh, he had the surgery and Taker can still go. This was the first time that we've really seen the Undertaker back to that glory. And you looked at this and you just went, yeah, he is an actual badass with this match.
Okay. Things I've seen on social media tonight have been very interesting. But one of the things, the topics that has been coming up, and it's been a topic for, I don't know, a decade now. They got to do Undertaker and Sting. They got to do Undertaker and Sting. Now they're like, you got to do Undertaker and Sting in this manner. It's like, no, because that there's no... What, you're going to have Sting call out the Undertaker's wife again? That makes no... Like, you got to have a story to do this type of thing. You have to have a reason to do it. You can't just have two characters because they're dark and mysterious fight in this manner. It just doesn't work.
With the way that they sort of reset the Undertaker character, they've now reset it where he is not the dead man, the dark dead man character anymore. And I don't think when he reappears that he can really show up like that again. I mean, I'm sure he could, and he probably will, but this was Mark resetting the character again. And this was, I'm going back to the American Badass, because if you, depending on who tells the story, he didn't want to stop doing the American Badass, but he got asked and voluntold that he was going to go back to the dead man gimmick, and that's what he was going to do. And I think this is now his opportunity to revisit the character that he liked to do 20 years later.
And it's not even going back to the character. He's just more being him.
Himself. Yeah, he's finally getting to be himself, and he's going... This is his last run. However long it lasts, this is his last run. And I think ultimately he wants to tell the story as he goes out as himself. Not as the Undertaker, purely... Not as Mark purely, but a nice hybrid cross where it's the both of them together riding off into the sunset, and that's how he's telling that story. And this is the start of that, I feel like, where he's now taken the character, he's hit the reset button on it once again, and we've refreshed the Undertaker character, because you can't have him be invincible anymore. Because like Rock said, we have seen what time has done to the dead man. And time, like, all of us, has caught up to him, and little bits and pieces have been chipped away, and very slowly the Undertaker has become mortal to us. And if he's going to be mortal to us, then he doesn't need to be the invincible dead man character anymore. He needs to be more human, which is where we're at. Now, in this context, yes, he was absolutely back to his glory days. We saw him at his best in this. Because they were able to edit, they were able to stop, they were able to pause, they were able to do all the things to make sure that this was the best it could possibly be.
Because he wasn't out there, he wasn't out there taking bumps, he was not wrestling, he was fighting, he was standing tall, he was moving around. Did he go down a couple of times? Yeah, but there, and it was in very cinematic ways that he went down. He didn't have to struggle, he didn't have to quickly get back up to his feet and take a move and then go back down again and get up and down, up and down, up and down. He got to slowly fight a man in an environment that's comfortable for him. So it worked. The entire thing worked. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, when it comes to the fact of fighting Sting, yes, it's the dream match everyone wanted 10 years ago. The reason I think tonight works so well is because he had AJ there to make him also look good.
Yep.
As much as Mark did all of the things he was supposed to, there are things that happened in that match. You know, taking the bump off the roof into the wood. You're not going to gimmick that with Sting. Someone needs to fly off the roof. AJ, God love him, was like, you know what? I'm fighting Taker at Mania. I'm doing the shit.
Yes, sir. I will do whatever you want, sir. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, and like we talked about Thursday, I think it was one of those moments where it's just like, AJ's going, wait, I get to fight Taker. Wait, it's at Mania. Oh, this is going down. And it's one of those things when you're doing this match, it's like, okay, we might need you to do a bump. And he's like, cool. As long as, you know, it's safe, I'm doing it. I mean, he knows this match is big.
So the reactions coming in about the show, Matt Hardy, my Twitter feed exploded. Thanks for all the love, folks. I'm truly honored. Cinematic matches 100% work with the right characters, scenarios, and families. That is accurate. I envisioned them as a new branch of pro wrestling years ago. Much like TLC did, the Broken Universe will leave its mark. Without Matt Hardy doing whatever the Broken Universe, we would never have gotten this type of thing. Because WWE would have never saw the idea, looked at it, talked them out about it, and like we would never gotten to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't exist. Because you've seen what they've done in the past. They've done the Boiler Room Brawls, but they were never as dramatic as this. Then there's Mick Foley, and apparently he had an urgent appeal to Vince McMahon.
Mr. McMahon, may I please be in next year's Boneyard match at WrestleMania?
No. Mick,
oh my
no.
God. Mick, we love you. We love you. But as Lindsay said, you didn't walk right the last time you had to face this man.
Mick, he took years off your life. Think about this. Think about this really hard. I think overall the reaction to this match has been positive. I think there are some people, obviously, who did not like it, who did not enjoy it. It's not their thing. Because I think there are people who are still very much into everything has to stay in the ring, and that's fine. That's completely fine. I think there are people out there overall who did not like this show, but I think overall we need to be grateful that this show happened. I don't think this was different, and they warned us this was going to be different, right? We all knew this was different. There was going to be no crowd. There was going to be no massive stadium, no massive set, no pyro, no anything. Right? No really special entrances beyond Becky rolling up in a truck and Taker rolling up on a bike and AJ in a hearse. Like, there was none of what we expect for WrestleMania. But overall, for night one, this was a great show.
All right, Brent, go ahead.
Because for three or four hours.
3 hours. 3 hours on the nose.
Plus the pre-show.
Plus the pre-show. Yeah, that's four.
We got an escape. We got to come out of what we're all living in right now, and we got that escape, and I'm just so happy and so grateful for it. I really genuinely am. Like, I've been looking forward to WrestleMania for 3 weeks now.
More than that, 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Like, I've been so excited for this WrestleMania, and I was really upset that there was the potential that it wasn't going to happen, because it's like, oh my God, no, this has been like one of the best built WrestleManias in a really long time, and we're not going to get it. Like, no, you don't understand. I need it.
And it came at the right time. Kayla tweeted, as Brent pointed out, The Undertaker is the coolest mofo on the planet. I don't care what anyone says. That was epic. Rip AJ. I'll say it one more time. You may be phenomenal, but you ain't the phenom. Hashtag WrestleMania. Also, we need segueing away from the Boneyard match for a second. Props to Xavier Woods for getting geared up tonight.
He watched it in gear. I loved it.
You gotta support your boys. You gotta support your boys. That's all. That's it.
It's what you gotta do.
The one thing I loved about this Mania being taped as well is that you got the reaction of the wrestlers while it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, throughout the night, everyone was tweeting about, you know, the matches that were going on, or, like, Braun winning. So you had a bunch of people that were chiming in, you know, congrats, Braun, when this happened. At a live Mania, you're not going to do that because everyone's busy at Mania.
They're working.
Right, but this has been in the can for a week, and now everyone... The one thing I will say is, for the wrestlers, this might actually be an interesting thing that they get to actually sit and watch it as fans for probably the first time in their career.
The first and last time.
Right. But yeah, they just get that special moment of like actually getting to sit at home and watch it, like, you know, maybe when they were kids again, but this time as adults and watching your match going, oh my God, this is really cool.
Imagine being AJ Styles sitting there with your kids watching this going, I just put on an epic with The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Kids, daddy's okay, you see?
I'm right here. I'm okay. But I put on an epic performance with The Undertaker. I'm not actually buried alive. LeMans asks, do you think the Firefly Funhouse match closes tomorrow, or does Lesnar McIntyre? Okay.
I don't know how to answer that question, because I feel like...
I can give you an answer. If John Cena wins the Firefly Funhouse, it's closing WrestleMania tomorrow.
He ain't winning the Firefly Funhouse.
He can't.
And then there's your answer.
It's the end of the night is going to be Drew McIntyre holding the belt.
You got to have the happy, especially right now, you need the happy moment to end the show.
I feel like for the Firefly Funhouse, because of what that is, what we all think that's going to be, I feel like that's going on early in the show because you can't do that match just based on what we saw tonight and then go into a title match. You can't do that. You need that buffer. You need filler.
So it could close. It legitimately could close as it's something additional. It could.
So you either have to do the title match first before the Funhouse match, or you do the Funhouse match like the first or second match, probably second match into the show, and then you have everyone else kind of sort of like you have a couple matches in between like it and maybe the women's title, and then a couple more, and then the title match. But yeah, you can't have the Firefly Funhouse match before Drew and Brock, because Drew and Brock will not be that long. I feel like it's probably only going to be maybe 5 to 10 minutes max, whereas the Firefly Funhouse was probably going to be 20 to 30, if this one's any indication. So I feel like that's going to need some breathing room, a lot of breathing room.
The WWE Championship match tomorrow will be 3 to 4 times longer than the Universal Championship match tonight. Tim requested, what's amazing is that none of this WrestleMania tapings is spoiled. Yeah, there's a reason why. They were all threatened they would be fired if something got out.
Uh-huh.
Basically.
Now, Rock, I'm going to pose to you a question that we talked about on Thursday. In light of the way this match happened, is there commentary for the Firefly Funhouse?
No.
I think after the way they shot this match, they're not going to need it, nor should it have it. It should just be its own self-contained, and like we said, it needs to cut back to them going, what did we just watch?
With the dramatic elements they played tonight, yeah, they don't need it. Because it all depends. It really depends what the setting is. If you are able to have Cena and Bray really tell the story, you don't need it. On Thursday I thought it, because it was like, you need something. Then I watched SmackDown on Friday with all the puppets. The puppets can be your commentary. They can be your ambiance of whatever it is.
Can we just talk about the closing of SmackDown real quick? Because, dude.
That was so good. That was really good.
So good.
Oh, yeah, because we didn't get a chance to talk about it since it was on Friday.
Can we just, like, maybe I have the theory that what if, like, that happens and Cena does get trapped in the Funhouse forever and somehow he gets turned into a puppet?
Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. One second. Before we get into that question, because we'll answer that question in 21 seconds.
Welcome, everyone, to
this week's SmackDown Throwdown.
The best in the world!
I thought the same thing, that he could be turned into a puppet.
It lives. It lives. No, I'm just, I heard that and I was like, God, wouldn't that just be like a fitting in? Like, Bray Wyatt takes out John Cena once and for all, and even though like the puppets are voices in Cena's head, in Bray's head, and somehow Bray gets like a trophy of Cena to put in the Funhouse, or he turns Cena into a puppet in the Funhouse, and he has Cena as like a trophy in the Funhouse.
Because they did forever. say they would have said you would be playing with, once he beats you, you'll be playing with us forever. You can play with us forever. I mean, it's possible.
Because like we've only ever seen the Fiend like just destroy people. Mm-hmm. We've never seen anybody outside of really Seth Rollins go to the Funhouse and fight in the Funhouse. So there's I have a lot of theories surrounding the Funhouse. And it's like, I'm very curious to see how they do this. And it's like, well, what happens if you lose to the Fiend or Bray Wyatt in the Funhouse? Are you trapped there? Like, how do you get out? I don't know. But also, this proved that the Fiend and Bray Wyatt can be in the same place at the same time. Can't be on camera together, but they can be in the same place.
That jump scare at the end was perfect. Like, oh, he's seen us staring down after the puppets are talking with the fiend, and then Bray randomly appears, goes, "Let me in," and then boom, John jumps. He's like, "I'm not scared of him. You're just this and this and this. I ain't scared of you." Boom, he's scared now.
Yeah, Bray's like, "Hi." Yeah, that was so fire. And then there's like the really bizarre promo that's like going around social of John that got
pulled
cut, and I don't mind it. My only thing with it is that if they're going to link Husky and Bray, which Bray's already done, he's already opened that door because he has Huskus the pig, and he's referenced back to Husky Harris a couple times. I want a goddamn explanation of how Husky Harris, who's IRS's eldest blue-eyed boy, became Bray Wyatt. I want the explanation. I need it. Not because I feel like it will help storylines, but for personal reasons. I need to understand how that happened. Was it the punt to the head? Or did Bray start doing his magic juice? Because, oh hey, by the way, the rabbit lives, guys. Which I'm pretty sure is not appropriate for the wellness policy, and that's what happened, is Bray Wyatt happened. Because first he turned into the swamp slut, and now he's this.
So, overall, night one, I would say, it was a success. I don't think it was for everybody. Some people, I know, you know, some people wanted it to be canceled and whatever. Some people just, it may mean not their type of style, and that's fine. But if this was your style and you enjoyed it, fantastic. We all enjoyed it. Wasn't the greatest wrestling show of all time? No. Was it the greatest wrestling matches of all time? No. But guess what? As I mentioned, it was an escape for 3 hours. It was an escape from reality. And that's what professional wrestling is. That's what sports entertainment is. It's an escape.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just don't take it so seriously and just enjoy it. I mean, they got your money if you're complaining about it on Twitter.
They did. Yeah, they did get your money. I mean, they warned us in advance that this is going to be different and unique and special, and there will hopefully never be another WrestleMania like this ever again. So the fact that we were here for history, guys, we witnessed history tonight, and we're living through history right now. And like I said, WWE could have very easily thrown out their hands and said, fuck it, we're not going to do the show. We're going to postpone it, or we're just going to cancel it, and we're going to hit the reset button when we come back, and everything that you were going to get, hey, guess what? You're not getting it now. So let's think about that and just enjoy it. Like, enjoy it for what it is, because I promise you that pretty much any other promotion right now is probably in a very similar boat, where they're just doing what they can. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, when it comes to this, you're going to get your wish in about a week. We're getting Mania right now, but in a week we're not going to have really anything unless they're able to have taped something that we don't know about. And for probably the next 6 to 8 weeks, we're either going to live off of, hey, you've seen this before, or just nothing.
Yeah.
Probably may get WrestleMania on television.
Like, mm-hmm. this is the one thing that has survived this whole crisis and went ahead. It went on. Like, when you think of everything else that has been canceled, everything else that is not going on, WrestleMania has been like that one beacon of hope that it's like, they're going to do it. In some way, shape, or form, they're going to do it. And that means everything, that they're going to do it. Yes, they have their reasons. Yes, they're trying to make up money. Yes, they're trying to do this. Yes, they're trying to do that. But in the end, 2020, the year where everything else got canceled, we got WrestleMania. Just think about that.
We got a WrestleMania that's too big for just one night.
LeMans, Bray really hasn't gone around saying that he deserved anything. That's why I think the promo, one of the reasons it got pulled was it was just very odd because Bray...
I think it's more John taking shots at other locker room people.
Yeah, it's John taking shots at really Bray's generation, but Bray himself, I don't think, has ever gone around and said, well, I deserve this, I'm entitled to this. But, I mean, if anybody could say it, it would really be Bray, because he's essentially reinvented himself multiple times and has busted his ass in the process to get back to the top. So if anybody does deserve it, it is Bray. In my not so humble opinion.
With that said, I think we're done.
I think we're done. So we are going to take a quick break. Rock's going to round up the CB radio crew and they're going to do a show. Right?
Yeah, coming up in like legit like 3 minutes or so. Whenever. We're going to do CB radio. GreatTheGreatDebate.com. Go vote on the Russell Madness. And all that fun, happy stuff. Tomorrow night, Russell Talk Radio will be live to cover both nights of WrestleMania. So there was that. Tim will tell you more about his Red Dead Redemption playthroughs. I don't know. You can follow him at Flamesworms. Monday night will be the Raw post show. There will be a Raw after WrestleMania. We'll cover it all and all that fun stuff. And then when it comes to day two of WrestleMania, cover it on the Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. The Rack Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check out the Rack Extra Reviews, Total Bell of Season 5, Episode 1, now available. At Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com says Wild Talk Radio Network. If you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch accounts, call Twitch Prime. You can subscribe for free by hitting the purple rectangular button above the screen. Do the thing, stay tuned for all that. Use creator code ROCKETSOCK in the Fortnite item shop. There's Deadpool stuff. There's a whole bunch of Deadpool stuff and characters that are boxes. Hashtag at my partner. Brent's at King Kins, and he'll be along with me in just a couple minutes for CB Radio. Lindsay's going to plug some stuff now.
Yep, so you can follow me on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/LinsWard, and on my Twitter, which is LinsWard, same as the Twitch, LinsWard. And don't forget to check out The Rack Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on wildtalkradio.com. Brent, do you have anything you would like to plug?
No, RockRadio is on my Twitter, and then occasionally on Thursdays and Saturdays when we're not watching WrestleMania, you can find us on Fortnite with Friends here on the network, as well as CB Radio in about 2 minutes. Yay!
We're going to take a pee break, and then we'll be back. I'll be back live talking more stuff, because that's how this is going to go, y'all. That's how it's going to go, because it's ish time. It's time for the ish.
Time for the ish. So, all right, everybody, don't forget to check out our very fine sponsor, mbgfilmsyoutube.com/mbg1211. And sit tight for CB Radio. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I hope you guys enjoyed WrestleMania. Everybody, I hope you love tomorrow's show, which is same bat time, same bat channel for WrestleMania. And then tune in Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern to hear Rock and I talk about it, and maybe Brent too. So, till then, I'm Lindsay Ward for Rock, for Brent. This has been The Rack, and we will see you on Thursday. Bye!
WildTalkRadio.com.